My father, Menix IV, has been a man of peace all his life. He has been loyal to whomever it might be that ruled in the imperial palace, and he has kept Wai a prosperous and strong pillar of the Trantorian economy for the good of all the empire. I don't know that the emperor has ever trusted him any the more for all that, said Dors. I'm sure that is so, said Rachel calmly. For the emperors that have occupied the palace in my father's time have known themselves to be usurpers of a usurping line. Usurpers cannot afford to trust the true rulers. And yet my father has kept the peace. He has, of course, developed and trained a magnificent security force to maintain the peace, prosperity, and stability of the sector. And the imperial authorities have allowed this because they wanted Wai peaceful, prosperous, stable, and loyal. But is it loyal? Said Dors. To the true emperor, of course, said Rachel. And we have now reached the stage where our strength is such that we can take over the government quickly, in a lightning stroke, in fact, and before one can say civil war, there will be a true emperor, or empress, if you prefer, and Trantor will be as peaceful as before. Dors shook her head. May I enlighten you, as a historian? I am always willing to listen. And she inclined her head ever so slightly toward Dors. Whatever size your security force may be, however well trained and well equipped, they cannot possibly equal in size and strength the imperial forces backed by 25 million worlds. Ah, but you have put your finger on the usurper's weakness, Dr. Venabili. There are 25 million worlds with the imperial forces scattered over them. Those forces are thinned out over incalculable space, under uncounted officers, none of them particularly ready for any action outside their own provinces, many ready for action in their own interest rather than in the empire's. Our forces, on the other hand, are all here, all on Trantor. We can act and conclude before the distant generals and admirals can get it through their heads that they are needed. But that response will come, and with irresistible force. Are you certain of that? Said Rachel. We will be in the palace. Trantor will be ours and at peace. Why should the imperial forces stir when, by minding their own business, each petty military leader can have his own world to rule, his own province? But is that what you want? Asked Selden wonderingly. Are you telling me that you look forward to ruling over an empire that will break up into splinters? Rachel said, That is exactly right. I would rule over Trantor, over its outlying space settlements, over the few nearby planetary systems that are part of the Trantorian province. I would much rather be Emperor of Trantor than Emperor of the Galaxy. You would be satisfied with Trantor only? Said Dors in tones of the deepest disbelief. Why not? Said Rachel, suddenly ablaze. She leaned forward eagerly, both hands pressed palms down on the table. That is what my father has been planning for 40 years. He is only clinging to life now to witness its fulfillment. Why do we need millions of worlds, distant worlds that mean nothing to us, that weaken us, that draw our forces far away from us into meaningless cubic parsecs of space, that drown us in administrative chaos, that ruin us with their endless quarrels and problems, when they are all distant nothings as far as we are concerned? Our own populous world, our own planetary city, is galaxy enough for us. We have all we need to support ourselves. As for the rest of the galaxy, let it splinter. Every petty militarist can have his own splinter. They needn't fight. There will be enough for all. But they will fight just the same, said Dors. Each will refuse to be satisfied with his province. Each will fear that his neighbor is not satisfied with his province. Each will feel insecure and will dream of galactic rule as the only guarantee of safety. This is certain, Madam Empress of Nothing. There will be endless wars into which you and Trantor will be inevitably drawn, to the ruin of all. Rachel said with clear contempt, So it might seem, if one could see no farther than you do, if one relied on the ordinary lessons of history. What is there to see farther? Retorted Dors. What is one to rely on beyond the lessons of history? What lies beyond? Said Rachel. Why, he. And her arm shot outward, her index finger jabbing toward Selden. Me, said Selden. I have already told you that psycho-history... Rachel said, Do not repeat what you have already said, my good Dr. Selden. We gain nothing by that. Do you think, Dr. Venabili, that my father was never aware of the danger of endless civil war? Do you think he did not bend his powerful mind to thinking of some way to prevent that? He has been prepared at any time these last 10 years to take over the empire in a day. It needed only the assurance of security beyond victory. Which you can't have, said Dors. Which we had the moment we heard of Dr. Selden's paper at the decennial convention. I saw at once that that was what we needed. My father was too old to see the significance at once. When I explained it, however, he saw it too, and it was then that he formally transferred his power to me. So it is to you, Harry, that I owe my position, and to you I will owe my greater position in the future. I keep telling you that it cannot, began Selden with deep annoyance. It is not important what can or cannot be done. What is important is what people will or will not believe can be done. They will believe you, Harry, when you tell them the psychohistoric prediction is that Trantor can rule itself, and that the provinces can become kingdoms that will live together in peace. I will make no such prediction, said Selden. In the absence of true psychohistory, I won't play the charlatan. If you want something like that, you say it. Now, Harry, they won't believe me. It's you they will believe, the great mathematician. Why not oblige them? As it happens, said Selden, the Emperor also thought to use me as a source of self-serving prophecies. I refused to do it for him, so do you think I will agree to do it for you? Rachel was silent for a while, and when she spoke again, her voice had lost its intense excitement and became almost coaxing. Harry, she said, think a little of the difference between Cleon and myself. What Cleon undoubtedly wanted from you was propaganda to preserve his throne. It would be useless to give him that, for the throne can't be preserved. Don't you know that the Galactic Empire is in a state of decay, that it cannot endure for much longer? Trantor itself is slowly sliding into ruin because of the ever-increasing weight of administering 25 million worlds. What's ahead of us is breakup and civil war, no matter what you do for Cleon. Selden said, I have heard something like this said. It may even be true. But what then? Well then, help it break into fragments without any war. Help me take Trantor. Help me establish a firm government over a realm small enough to be ruled efficiently. Let me give freedom to the rest of the galaxy, each portion to go its own way according to its own customs and cultures. The galaxy will become a working whole again through the free agencies of trade, tourism, and communication, and the fate of cracking into disaster under the present rule of force that barely holds it together will be averted. My ambition is moderate indeed. One world, not millions. Peace, not war. Freedom, not slavery. Think about it and help me. Selden said, Why should the galaxy believe me any more than they would believe you? They don't know me. And which of our fleet commanders will be impressed by the mere word psychohistory? You won't be believed now, but I don't ask for action now. The House of Y, having waited thousands of years, can wait thousands of days more. Cooperate with me, and I will make your name famous. I will make the promise of psychohistory glow through all the worlds, and at the proper time, when I judge the moment to be the chosen moment, you will pronounce your prediction and we will strike. Then, in a twinkling of history, the galaxy will exist under a new order that will render it stable and happy for eons. Come now, Harry. Can you refuse me? Overthrow. Thallus Emmer, a sergeant in the armed security forces of the Y sector of ancient Trentor. Aside from these totally unremarkable vital statistics, nothing is known of the man except that on one occasion he held the fate of the galaxy in his fist. Encyclopedia Galactica. 87. Breakfast the next morning was served in an alcove near the rooms of the captured three, and it was luxurious indeed. There certainly was a considerable variety to the food, and more than enough of everything. Selden sat at the breakfast table with a mound of spicy sausages before him, totally ignoring Doris Van Abbeley's gloomy predictions concerning stomachs and colic. Rach said,
The dame... The Madam Mayor said when she came to see me last night.
She came to see you, said Selden.
Yeah. She said she wanted to make sure I was comfortable. She said when she had a chance, she would take me to a zoo.
A zoo? Selden looked at Doris. What kind of zoo can they have on Trentor? Cats and dogs?
There are some aboriginal animals, said Doris, and I imagine they import some aboriginals from other worlds. And there are also the shared animals that all the worlds have, other worlds having more than Trentor, of course. As a matter of fact, Y has a famous zoo, probably the best on the planet, after the Imperial Zoo itself.
Rach said,
She's a nice old lady.
Not that old, said Doris. But she's certainly feeding us well. There's that, admitted Selden. When breakfast was over, Rach left to go exploring. Once they had retired to Dora's room, Selden said with marked discontent, I don't know how long we'll be left to ourselves. She's obviously plotted ways of preoccupying our time. Doris said,
Actually, we have little to complain of at the moment. We're much more comfortable here than we were either in Mycogen or Dahl.
Selden said, Doris, you're not being won over by that woman, are you?
Me? By Rachel? Of course not. How can you possibly think so?
Well, you're comfortable. You're well fed. It would be natural to relax and accept what fortune brings.
Yes, very natural. And why not do that?
Look, you were telling me last night about what's going to happen if she wins out. I may not be much of a historian myself, but I am willing to take your word for it. And actually, it makes sense, even to a non-historian. The Empire will shatter, and its shards will be fighting each other for indefinitely. She must be stopped.
I agree, said Doris. She must be. What I fail to see is how we can manage to do that little thing right at this moment.
She looked at Selden narrowly.
Harry, you didn't sleep last night, did you?
Did you? It was apparent he had not. Doris stared at him, a troubled look clouding her face.
Have you lain awake thinking of galactic destruction because of what I said?
That and some other things. Is it possible to reach Cheddar Hummin? This last was said in a whisper.
Doris said, I tried to reach him when we first had to flee arrest in Dahl. He didn't come. I'm sure he received the message, but he didn't come. It may be that for any of a number of reasons he just couldn't come to us, but when he can, he will.
Do you suppose something has happened to him?
No, said Doris patiently. I don't think so.
How can you know?
The word would somehow get to me, I'm sure of it. And the word hasn't gotten to me.
Selden frowned and said, I'm not as confident as you are about all this. In fact, I'm not confident at all. Even if Hummin came, what can he do in this case? He can't fight all of Y. If they have, as Rachelle claims, the best organized army on Trantor, what will he be able to do against it?
There's no point in discussing that. Do you suppose you can convince Rachelle, bang it into her head somehow, that you don't have psychohistory?
I'm sure she's aware that I don't have it, and that I'm not going to get it for many years, if at all.
But she'll say I have psychohistory, and if she does that skillfully enough, people will believe her, and eventually they will act on what she says my predictions and pronouncements are, even if I don't say a word.
Surely that will take time. She won't build you up overnight, or in a week. To do it properly, it might take her a year.
Selden was pacing the length of the room, turning sharply on his heel and striding back.
That might be so, but I don't know. There would be pressure on her to do things quickly. She doesn't strike me as the kind of woman who has cultivated the habit of patience, and her old father, Mannix IV, would be even more impatient. He must feel the nearness of death, and if he's worked for this all his life, he would much prefer to see it done a week before his death rather than a week after. Besides, here he paused and looked around the empty room.
Besides what?
Well, we must have our freedom. You see, I've solved the psychohistory problem.
Dora's eyes widened.
You have it? You've worked it out.
Not worked it out in the full sense. That might take decades, centuries for all I know. But I now know it's practical, not just theoretical. I know it can be done, so I must have the time, the peace, the facilities to work at it. The Empire must be held together till I, or possibly my successors, will learn how best to keep it so, or how to minimize the disaster if it does split up despite us. It was the thought of having a beginning to my task and of not being able to work at it that kept me up last night.
88. It was their fifth day in Y, and in the morning Doris was helping Rach into a formal costume that neither was quite familiar with. Rach looked at himself dubiously in the holomirror and saw a reflected image that faced him with precision, imitating all his motions, but without any inversion of left and right. Rach had never used a holomirror before and had been unable to keep from trying to feel it, then laughing almost with embarrassment, when his hand passed through it while the image's hand poked ineffectually at his real body. He said at last,
I look funny.
He studied his tunic, which was made of a very pliant material, with a thin filigreed belt. Then passed his hands up a stiff collar that rose like a cup past his ears on either side.
My head looks like a ball inside a bowl.
Doris said, But this is the sort of thing rich children wear in Y. Everyone who sees you will admire you and envy you.
With my hair all stuck down?
Certainly. You'll wear this round little hat.
It'll make my head more like a ball.
Then don't let anyone kick it. Now remember what I told you. Keep your wits about you and don't act like a kid.
But I am a kid,
he said, looking up at her with a wide-eyed, innocent expression. I'm surprised to hear you say that, said Doris. I'm sure you think of yourself as a 12-year-old adult. Rach grinned.
Okay, I'll be a good spy.
That's not what I'm telling you to be. Don't take chances. Don't sneak behind doors to listen. If you get caught at it, you're no good to anyone, especially not to yourself.
Oh, come on, missus. What do you think I am, a kid or something?
You just said you were, didn't you, Rach? You just listen to everything that's said without seeming to, and remember what you hear, and tell us. That's simple enough.
Simple enough for you to say, Mrs. Van Abbley, said Rach with a grin. And simple enough for me to do.
And be careful. Rach winked.
You bet.
A flunky, as coolly impolite as only an arrogant flunky can be, came to take Rach to where Rochelle was awaiting him. Selden looked after them and said thoughtfully, He probably won't see the zoo, he'll be listening so carefully. I'm not sure it's right to thrust a boy into danger like that.
Danger? I doubt it. Rach was brought up in the slums of Billybottom, remember? I suspect he has more alley smarts than you and I put together. Besides, Rochelle is fond of him and will interpret everything he does in his favor.
Poor woman. Are you actually sorry for her, Doris? Do you mean that she's not worth sympathy because she's a mayor's daughter and considers herself a mayor in her own right, and because she's intent on destroying the empire? Perhaps you're right, but even so, there are some aspects of her for which one might show some sympathy. For instance, she's had an unhappy love affair. That's pretty evident. Undoubtedly, her heart was broken. For a time, at least.
Selden said, Have you ever had an unhappy love affair, Doris?
Doris considered for a moment or two, then said,
Not really. I'm too involved with my work to get a broken heart.
I thought as much.
Then why did you ask?
I might have been wrong.
How about you?
Selden seemed uneasy. As a matter of fact, yes, I have spared the time for a broken heart. Badly cracked, anyway.
I thought as much.
Then why did you ask?
Not because I thought I might be wrong, I promise you. I just wanted to see if you would lie. You didn't, and I'm glad.
There was a pause, and then Selden said, 5 days have passed, and nothing has happened.
Except that we are being treated well, Harry.
If animals could think, they'd think they were being treated well when they were only being fattened for the slaughter.
I admit she's fattening the empire for the slaughter.
But when?
I presume when she's ready.
She boasted she could complete the coup in a day, and the impression I got was that she could do that on any day.
Even if she could, she would want to make sure that she could cripple the imperial reaction, and that might take time.
How much time?
She plans to cripple the reaction by using me, but she's making no effort to do so. There is no sign that she's trying to build up my importance. Wherever I go in Y, I'm unrecognized. There are no Y-an crowds gathering to cheer me. There's nothing on the news holocasts.
Doris smiled.
One would almost suppose that your feelings are hurt at not being made famous. You're naive, Harry, or not a historian, which is the same thing. I think you had better be more pleased that the study of psychohistory will be bound to make a historian of you than that it may save the empire. If all human beings understood history, they might cease making the same stupid mistakes over and over.
In what way am I naive? Asked Selden, lifting his head and staring down his nose at her.
Don't be offended, Harry. I think it's one of your attractive features, actually.
I know. It arouses your maternal instincts, and you have been asked to take care of me. But in what way am I naive? In thinking that Rachel would try to propagandize the population of the Empire, generally, into accepting you as seer. She would accomplish nothing in that way. Quadrillions of people are hard to move quickly. There is social and psychological inertia, as well as physical inertia. And by coming out into the open, she would simply alert Demerzel.
Then what is she doing?
My guess is that the information about you, suitably exaggerated and glorified, is going out to a crucial few. It is going to those viceroys of sectors, those admirals of fleets, those people of influence she feels look kindly upon her, or grimly upon the Emperor. 100 or so of those who might rally to her side will manage to confuse the Loyalists just long enough to allow Rachel the First to set up her new order firmly enough to beat off whatever resistance might develop. At least, I imagine that's how she reasons.
And yet we haven't heard from Hummon. I'm sure he must be doing something just the same. This is too important to ignore.
Has it occurred to you that he might be dead?
That's a possibility, but I don't think so. If he was, the news would reach me.
Here?
Even here.
Selden raised his eyebrows but said nothing. Reach came back in the late afternoon, happy and excited, with descriptions of monkeys and of Beccarian demoirs, and he dominated the conversation during dinner. It was not until after dinner, when they were in their own quarters, that Doris said,
"Now, tell me what happened with Madame Mayer, Reach. Tell me anything she did or said that you think we ought to know."
"One thing," said Reach, his face lighting up. "That's why she didn't show at dinner, I bet."
"What was it?"
"The zoo was closed, except for us, you know. There were lots of us. Rachel and me, and all sorts of guys in uniforms, and dames in fancy clothes, and like that. Then this guy in a uniform, a different guy, who wasn't there to begin with, came in toward the end, and he said something in a low voice. And Rachel turned to all the people and made with her hand like they shouldn't move, and they didn't. And she went a little ways away with this new guy so she could talk to him, and no one could hear her. Except I kept paying no attention and kept looking at the different cages and sort of moved near to Rachel so I could hear her. She said, 'How dare they?' like she was real mad. And the guy in the uniform, he looked nervous. I just got quick looks because I was trying to make out like I was watching the animals, so mostly I just heard the words. He said, 'Somebody,' I don't remember the name, but he was a general or something. He said this general said the officers had sworn religious to Rachel's old man."
"Sworn allegiance," said Doris.
"Something like that. And they was nervous about having to do what a dame says. He said they wanted the old man or else. If he was a kind of sick, he should pick some guy to be mayor, not a dame."
"Not a dame? Are you sure?"
"That's what he said. He, like, whispered it. He was so nervous, and Rachel was so mad she could hardly speak. She said, 'I'll have his head. They will all swear allegiance to me tomorrow, and whoever refuses will have cause to regret it before an hour has passed.' That's exactly what she said. She broke up the whole party, and we all came back, and she didn't say one word to me all the time, just sat there, looking kind of mean and angry.
Doris said, "Good. Don't you mention this to anyone, Rach."
"Course not. Is it what you wanted?"
"Very much what I wanted. You did well, Rach. Now go to your room and forget the whole thing. Don't even think about it."
Once he was gone, Doris turned to Selden and said, "This is very interesting. Daughters have succeeded fathers, or mothers for that matter, and held mayoralities or other high offices on any number of occasions. There have even been reigning empresses, as you undoubtedly know, and I can't recall that there was ever in imperial history any serious question of serving under one. It makes one wonder why such a thing should now arise and why."
Selden said, "Why not? We've only recently been in Mycogen, where women are held in a total lack of esteem and couldn't possibly hold positions of power, however minor."
"Yes, of course, but that's an exception. There are other places where women dominate. For the most part, though, government and power have been more or less equisexual. If more men tend to hold high positions, it is usually because women tend to be more bound, biologically, to children."
"But what is the situation in Y?"
"Equisexual, as far as I know. Rochelle didn't hesitate to assume mayoral power, and I imagine old Mannix didn't hesitate to grant it to her. And she was surprised and furious at encountering male dissent. She can't have expected it."
Selden said, "You're clearly pleased at this. Why?"
"Simply because it's so unnatural that it must be contrived, and I imagine Hummon is doing the contriving."
Selden said thoughtfully, "You think so?"
"I do," said Doris.
"You know," said Selden, "so do I."
89. It was their 10th day in Y, and in the morning Harry Selden's door signal sounded, and Rach's high-pitched voice outside was crying out,
"Mister! Mr. Selden! It's war!"
Selden took a moment to snap from sleep to wakefulness and scrambled out of bed. He was shivering slightly. The Wyans liked their domiciles on the chilly side, he had discovered quite early in his stay there, when he threw the door open. Rach bounced in, excited and wide-eyed.
"Mr. Selden, they have Mannix, the old mayor. They have..."
"Who have, Rach?"
"The Imperials. Their jets came in last night, all over. The news holocasts are telling all about it. It's on in the missus' room. She said to let you sleep, but I figured you'd want to know."
"And you were quite right."
Selden, pausing only long enough to throw on a bathrobe, burst into Dora's room. She was fully dressed and was watching the holoset in the alcove. Behind the clear, small image of a desk sat a man with the spaceship and sun sharply defined on the left front of his tunic. On either side, two soldiers, also wearing the spaceship and sun, stood armed. The officer at the desk was saying, "Is under the peaceful control of His Imperial Majesty. Mayor Mannix is safe and well, and is in full possession of his mayoral powers under the guidance of friendly Imperial troops. He will be before you soon to urge calm on all Wyans, and to ask any Wyan soldiers still in arms to lay them down." There were other news holocasts by various newsmen with unemotional voices, all wearing Imperial armbands. The news was all the same. Surrender by this or that unit of the Wyan security forces, after firing a few shots for the records, and sometimes after no resistance at all. This town center and that town center were occupied, and there were repeated views of Wyan crowds somberly watching Imperial forces marching down the streets. Doris said, "It was perfectly executed, Harry. Surprise was complete. There was no chance of resistance, and none of consequence was offered."
Then Mayor Mannix IV appeared, as had been promised. He was standing upright, and perhaps for the sake of appearances, there were no Imperials in sight, though Selden was reasonably certain that an adequate number were present just out of camera range. Mannix was old, but his strength, though worn, was still apparent. His eyes did not meet the holocamera, and his words were spoken as though forced upon him. But, as had been promised, they counseled Wyans to remain calm, to offer no resistance, to keep Wy from harm, and to cooperate with the Emperor, who it was hoped would survive long on the throne. "No mention of Rochelle," said Selden. "It's as though his daughter doesn't exist."
"No one has mentioned her," said Doris. "And this place, which is after all her residence, or one of them, hasn't been attacked. Even if she manages to slip away and take refuge in some neighboring sector, I doubt she will be safe anywhere on Trantor for long."
"Perhaps not," came a voice, "but I'll be safe here for a little while." Rochelle entered. She was properly dressed, properly calm. She was even smiling, but it was no smile of joy. It was rather a cold baring of teeth. The three stared at her in surprise for a moment, and Selden wondered if she had any of her servants with her, or if they had promptly deserted her at the first sign of adversity. Doris said a little coldly, "I see, Madam Mayor, that your hopes for a coup cannot be maintained. Apparently you have been forestalled."
"I have not been forestalled. I have been betrayed. My officers have been tampered with, and against all history and rationality, they have refused to fight for a woman, but only for their old master. And, traitors as they are, they then let their old master be seized so that he cannot lead them in resistance." She looked about for a chair and sat down. "And now the Empire must continue to decay and die when I was prepared to offer it new life."
"I think," said Doris, "the Empire has avoided an indefinite period of useless fighting and destruction. Console yourself with that, Madam Mayor." It was as though Rochelle did not hear her. "So many years of preparation destroyed in a night." She sat there beaten, defeated, and seemed to have aged 20 years. Doris said, "It could scarcely have been done in a night. The suborning of your officers, if that took place, must have taken time." "At that, Demerzel is a master, and quite obviously I underestimated him. How he did it, I don't know. Threats, bribes, smooth and specious argument. He is a master at the art of stealth and betrayal. I should have known." She went on after a pause. "If this was outright force on his part, I would have had no trouble destroying anything he sent against us. Who would think that Y would be betrayed, that an oath of allegiance would be so lightly thrown aside?" Selden said with automatic rationality, "But I imagine the oath was made not to you, but to your father."
"Nonsense," said Rochelle vigorously. "When my father gave me the mayoral office, as he was legally entitled to do, he automatically passed on to me any oaths of allegiance made to him. There is ample precedence for this. It is customary to have the oath repeated to the new ruler, but that is a ceremony only, and not a legal requirement. My officers know that, though they choose to forget. They use my womanhood as an excuse, because they quake in fear of imperial vengeance that would never have come had they been staunch, or tremble with greed for promised rewards they will surely never get, if I know Demerzel." She turned sharply toward Selden. "He wants you, you know. Demerzel struck at us for you."
Selden started. "Why me?"
"Don't be a fool. For the same reason I wanted you. To use you as a tool, of course." she sighed. At least I am not utterly betrayed. There are still loyal soldiers to be found. Sergeant?
Sergeant Immerthalis entered with a soft, cautious step that seemed incongruous considering his size. His uniform was spruce, his long blonde mustache fiercely curled.
Madam Mayor,
he said, drawing himself to attention with a snap. He was still, in appearance, the side of beef that Harry had named him. A man still following orders blindly, totally oblivious to the new and changed state of affairs. Rochelle smiled sadly at Rach.
And how are you, little Rach? I had meant to make something of you. It seems now I won't be able to.
Hello, Mrs. Madam, said Rach awkwardly.
And to have made something of you too, Dr. Selden, said Rochelle. And there also I must crave pardon. I cannot.
For me, madam, you need have no regrets.
But I do. I cannot very well let Demerzel have you. That would be one victory too many for him, and at least I can stop that.
I would not work for him, madam, I assure you, any more than I would have worked for you.
It is not a matter of work. It is a matter of being used. Farewell, Dr. Selden. Sergeant, blast him.
The sergeant drew his blaster at once, and Doris, with a loud cry, lunged forward, but Selden reached out for her and caught her by the elbow. He hung on desperately.
Stay back, Doris, he shouted, or he'll kill you. He won't kill me.
You too, Rach, stand back. Don't move. Selden faced the sergeant.
You hesitate, Sergeant, because you know you cannot shoot. I might have killed you 10 days ago, but I did not. And you gave me your word of honor at that time that you would protect me.
What are you waiting for? Snapped Rochelle. I said shoot him down, Sergeant.
Selden said nothing more. He stood there while the sergeant, eyes bulging, held his blaster steady and pointed at Selden's head.
You have your order, shrieked Rochelle.
I have your word, said Selden quietly.
And Sergeant Thallus said in a choked tone,
Dishonored, either way.
His hand fell, and his blaster clanged to the floor.
Rochelle cried out, Then you too betray me.
Before Selden could move or Doris free herself from his grip, Rochelle seized the blaster, turned it on the sergeant, and closed contact. Selden had never seen anyone blasted before. Somehow, from the name of the weapon, perhaps, he had expected a loud noise, an explosion of flesh and blood. This Wyan blaster, at least, did nothing of the sort. What mangling it did to the organs inside the sergeant's chest, Selden could not tell. But without a change in expression, without a wince of pain, the sergeant crumbled and fell, dead beyond any doubt or any hope. And Rochelle turned the blaster on Selden with a firmness that put to rest any hope for his own life beyond the next second. It was Rach, however, who jumped into action the moment the sergeant fell. Racing between Selden and Rochelle, he waved his hands wildly.
Mrs., he called, don't shoot.